big issue.
I want to get Ellen Chesler, a Hillary Clinton supporter, to respond.
I actually was at one of those Goldman Sachs speeches, and it was about foreign policy, completely about foreign policy. And the entire fee for the speaking went to support the Clinton Foundation. And this raises a big question in my view. I mean, I think America needs to do a little bit better by its ex-presidents, because we've put them in a situation, and President Obama is going to be in the same situation, where in order to support, unless they're individually wealthy themselves, which is very rare, in order to support their lives after being in office, I mean, these offices no longer allow you to kind of fade away to the Supreme Court, or as has been in the past.
But you said the money goes to the foundation, not to them.
So the money supported the foundation, almost all of it. I don't know exactly the numbers, because I'm not inside.
Well, Li Fong, what about that?
So that, I mean, you know, again.
Well, let me ask. We only have 30 seconds. Li Fong, your response.
I believe the Clintons have said some of the money has gone to the foundation, but the vast majority of it has personally enriched them. They've, you know, released their personal ethics disclosures, and it's clear that the Clintons have made a lot of money, tens of millions of dollars, as I mentioned, earning over $115 million from the speaker circuit over the last 16 years.
And then they've given it to the foundation.
This is truly unprecedented.
Then well, we're going to have to leave it there, but we'll continue to explore this, of course. Li Fong with The Intercept, Ellen Chesler with Roosevelt Institute, and thanks also to John Nichols from The Nation. This is Democracy Now! We will be covering New Hampshire. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with their hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today, we'll review the Iowa caucuses.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Community Acupuncture and Massage, a benefit for political prisoner Mutulu Shakur, Sunday, February the 7th, noon to 4 p.m. at 7 Star Acupuncture in Portland. Dr. Mutulu Shakur was one of the founders of the Black Acupuncture Advisory Association in North America and the Harlem Institute of Acupuncture. Incarcerated for 30 years, Mutulu and his legal team are seeking community and financial support to fight his imprisonment. A group of licensed acupuncturists and massage therapists are offering treatments to our community as a fundraiser. Again, that's of Community Acupuncture and Massage, a benefit for political prisoner Mutulu Shakur, Sunday, February the 7th, noon to 4 p.m. at 7 Star Acupuncture, 436 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You ask what land I love the best. Iowa, tis Iowa, the fairest state in all the West. Iowa, oh Iowa, from yonder Mississippi stream to where Missouri's waters gleam. Oh, fair it is, as poets dream. Iowa, in Iowa. Yonder fields of tasseled corn, Iowa, in Iowa, where plenty fills her golden horn, Iowa, in Iowa. See how her wondrous prairies shine to yonder sunset's purple line. Oh, happy land, oh, land of mine, Iowa, oh, Iowa.
Yes, yes, Iowa. Hey, welcome to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. We're going to talk a little bit about the process of selection of candidates and the interesting phenomenon of the Iowa caucuses, but also about the pressures and the power of money and all of this. To join the conversation, call us or go online, 231-8187. I want to start with some facts. Well, it always spoils the fun, but why not? The three major networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS, essentially paid more attention to Donald Trump than anyone else in the previous period of time. 327 minutes of standalone coverage in 2015, while Bernie Sanders received 20 minutes of coverage. So, you know, just think about that. That's a 10 to 1 ratio. No, it's 16 to 1 ratio. Sorry. Media Matters has pointed out that Trump and Sanders are polling at similar levels in their respective races. So this is not about probabilities of winning or anything like that. This is a straight out obvious question of bias. It goes on and on. The three nightly news shows devoted more time to the British royal family, which we all know is very important to us, 32 minutes. The holiday season, of course, that's selling stuff, 82 minutes. And the New England Patriots Deflategate, 145 minutes. Indeed, Trump alone received more coverage by the big three news broadcasters than the entire Democratic primary contest. Despite that, 1 million small donors have come across for the Sanders campaign. I mention these numbers to make an important point, which is that in spite of an enormous effort to keep the presidential races centered on the more conservative or more traditional candidates, including Hillary Clinton, Sanders actually tied and may have won, we don't know, may have lost, tied a virtual, as he said last night, a virtual tie with Hillary Clinton in the Iowa caucuses. Now, the caucuses are weird. The caucuses are weird. They are unlike many other states. People gather, they separate into groups in the Democratic one, and then they count heads, and then they flip a coin if it's a tie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the actual delegate counts won't be determined for months.
Right.
It's pretty weird. Yes. I think it's safe to call it a tie.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see how it's manipulated. But yeah. And this, all of this is significant in that we are taught in our schools and in our lives that this is a really great democracy with the best possible ways of selecting people for office. But Bernie Sanders is, to my memory, the first candidate to have a chance at a major party nomination who is an avowed social democrat. Now, I just want to make one thing clear. The concept social democracy is not well understood in the United States. But if you go and live in France or Germany or Denmark or Holland or Italy or many, many other countries in Western Europe, you discover that there is capitalism. There is a dominant and powerful ruling class, but at the same time, after much struggle and revolutions and so on, the people have health care, excellent education, very good housing, very good, you name it, parks, recreation, public transport, unlike the United States.
Now, he didn't call himself a democratic socialist, but I think you could say that Franklin Delano Roosevelt governed as one.
Well, he and to a great extent did. And of course, Roosevelt was the last and only candidate to, in a crisis, attempt to bring the nation to a more just situation for average people.
But he was a patrician.
Yes.
He was from old Northeast money, a blue blood, who was a traitor to his class.
Traitor!
Yeah. In fact, the definitive biography of the man is called Traitor to His Class. But Bernie Sanders is, I think, a new sort of animal in that regard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hope he doesn't kill himself in this contest. I saw him this morning in the dark talking to his supporters after flying overnight. Everybody got the hell out of Iowa to beat the snowstorm. and he arrived in New Hampshire, and he was obviously exhausted, and his voice was failing. And I suddenly realized, man, this is a guy in his 70s running for president.
Yeah, he's a healthy, vigorous guy, apparently.
Well, yeah, his health record is excellent.
And I'm really surprised this continues to be an issue campaign after campaign. There's always somebody, you know, who's at least 70 years old. John McCain was north of 70. Ronald Reagan was north of 70.
Well, yeah, and he got shot and kind of lost his mind and was president thereafter for many years.
Yeah, right. So it's a low bar, is what I'm saying.
I agree.
Now, I want to touch on something you just mentioned, that we're brought up to believe that this is just a shimmering, sterling democracy in which we live, and we have the best possible means of determining a fair and correct outcome.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Which is not true.
Well, all of it. We are nominally a democracy, but if one gets down to how things really work, it seems less and less democratic. And the fact that all the primaries don't happen on the same day is obnoxious. How do you justify that? The only possible grounds is tradition. But we would have a much more accurate, much more fair, much more democratic outcome if we simply held a nationwide primary on which every state selects its delegates at the same time.
Yeah, but I don't think fair enters into it at all. I mean, I was just reading to the audience some figures about how Bernie Sanders has been essentially, up until now, ignored by the major media sources.
Yeah,
and
more
time was devoted to in Deflategate than to any of the political contests.
Sure, that's fine. The media coverage and where they decide to turn their lenses and why, I think that's a subject of a different... that's a subject for another day.
Another day?
Yes. I think, though, that it's indisputable that having a single day nationwide primary would be a more democratic way.
Yeah, but that's never going to happen.
Why not?
What do you mean, why not? Because we have a system that essentially favors a process, which is an elimination race over a long period of time.
Yeah, it's a stupid system. Yeah. And we need to toss it out and put in a better one.
Well, I mean,
and a way
to start that. Yeah.
Well, obviously, an entirely different system from top to bottom would be ideal, right? Let's scrap the stupid Electoral College and move to a parliamentary representation system like the European democracies have. That would be the best way to get a more democratic, more fair outcome. But absent that, which would require several amendments to the Constitution, it would be a relatively easy statutory fix to have all the primaries on the same day.
That's true.
That would be a step in the right direction.
Well, but on the other hand, I found last night very interesting.
Yeah, I did too.
Very entertaining. I thought the most entertaining moment was when the Clinton campaign calculated using their
math skills.
Their math skills, yes, which are not insignificant, that probably Hillary would squeak by. And therefore, they declared her a winner long before any of the networks or anybody else had declared her a winner. And I watched as NBC became more and more angry at being preempted by the Hillary campaign. Now, we don't know, we won't know for several days exactly what the final counts are. It is, as Bernie Sanders said, a virtual tie.
And historically, the Iowa caucuses are not a very good predictor.
No.
Of the eventual major party nominees.
But they have a great state song, as we played earlier.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like "Oh Christmas Tree."
It does.
Yeah. In fact, one might go so far as to call them melodically identical. I don't know.
Oh, my. That Iowa would steal a Christian song.
But here's what I would like to get at today.
Okay.
I want to hear from our listeners, first of all, who they support,
whom
they support for president. Secondly, I'm curious. It's been a running theme on this program and on other programs at KBOO, and indeed amongst liberal circles in general over the past several electoral cycles, that if one considers oneself to be a true liberal or true progressive, then they will eschew the Democratic Party and the Democratic nominee. What I'm wondering, though, is if Bernie Sanders might make people reconsider that particular allegiance and wholeheartedly support the Democratic nominee. I'm curious about that.
Well, I mean, you're raising a question that has multiple heads, as it
were.
It
does, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, we got an hour.
We only have two political parties, which for a long, long time were Tweedledee and Tweedledummer. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is that that odd event has taken place through dark money, the Koch money and so on, mm-hmm. to bring the Republican Party, in what I consider to be a vast conspiracy, into the fold of the right wing, into essentially the John Birch Society model. Mm-hmm. That has been going on for a long, long time. Now, because of that, there's some difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. But if we pay attention to the Democratic Party in general, and to Hillary in particular, they really are a centrist party, cooperative with Goldman Sachs and all the other regular players in the powerful centers of wealth.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's true. So I'm wondering, for you progressives out there, would a Bernie Sanders nomination bring you back to the Democratic fold?
Well, you know, you've
mentioned... Or does it matter?
Well, you've mentioned several words. You've talked about liberals, progressives.
Yeah, which I use more or less interchangeably. I think a lot of people do.
I don't think they are interchangeable. I really don't. I think liberalism is a conception of great toleration. Mm-hmm. And can work to the center as well as to the left, conceivably to the right, had the right been right. that's a bad joke, but true. I think progressive definitely has meant, since 1948, a left party or a left political perspective. Thus, the Independent Progressive Party, with Henry Wallace at its head, attempted from the left to overthrow the Democratic Party in
yeah,
that 48
Yeah, but nobody
election.
Thinks about that, the Progressive Party or Wallace, when they use the term.
That's
a shame. Progressive came into vogue, colloquially, when the word liberal was effectively demonized by the right.
I don't know.
When it became taboo to call oneself a liberal, the word progressive started being used in its stead.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
So I think when most people use the words liberal and progressive these days,
it's interchangeable.
They more or less mean the same thing. Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to fight about that, but I think you're wrong.
All right. 231-8187 is the number to call. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Should we go to the phones?
Yeah, let's do that.
Brian, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I love hearing you guys argue. It's great. I am all of the above. You know, I've always been proud to be whatever they want to call us. I am a big supporter of Bernie Sanders. One thing I did, this is an interest, I have a couple little side notes. I heard Carl Wolfson on the radio yesterday. He's quitting his X-ray show.
Yes,
because of some really bad, well, he's I think he's tired out, but he's some really bad responses from Bernie supporters. He believes that he's pretty attacked because he was questioning some of the tactics of the Bernie campaign, and that makes me really sad that I love Bernie because he's patriotic and he's willing to question the establishment, and then here are the people that believe in questioning the establishment, not wanting anybody questioning their establishment. So I hope people get their blank together and stop that kind of behavior. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was about the Republicans, and I haven't heard anybody mention that the Trump versus Cruz is so funny because it's such a cartoon, because you've got this this snarky New York rich boy against a Southern preacher out of a Flannery O'Connor novel. It's it's really kind of funny. It's writing itself. It's a cartoon that's writing itself.
Hard to argue with that.
Okay, well, thanks, man. A couple of things about the Republicans. Trump is a clown, but he's a fascist clown. This is not just me. Many people think this. Mm-hmm. And he's
sounds
starting
like a
to,
Mozart opera waiting to be written, doesn't
really?
It?
Really. And he is starting to repeat himself, and he's starting to get tiresome to many people, not because of his politics, because of his lack of rhetorical skill. On the other hand, Cruz scares the hell out of me. I mean, he's really a serious
fascist.
He scares
me more than Trump does.
I also think that Cruz is not eligible to be president of the United States, which makes it kind of amusing. Will they bury that fact? Will we get a president of the United States that defies the constitutional limits? And I it's a possibility.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Trump's a clown, and I've been saying for quite a while that he's kind of there to make Cruz and Rubio look reasonable, and that's really scary. One little funny thing, I don't know if you guys saw a comedy skit where Trump was talking about getting together with his Christian friends, and in fact they read over some passages from Peace Psalms.
From which?
From Peace Psalms. as in Psalms.
Oh, the book of Psalms. Sure, Psalms.
But he called it P Psalms because he didn't know what
P, right, P Psalms. Sorry, okay. Hey, listen, thanks for the call, man.
Thank you.
I get it, P Psalms. Okay, got it.
And it's 2 Corinthians.
Right.
And this is a guy, I don't care about this biblical nonsense, but this is, remember that Cruz is playing the Christian, fierce Christian card.
Yes.
And so are the other Republican candidates. And Trump, that's not a card that Trump can really play.
You mentioned that about Ted Cruz. I want to talk about that for a second.
Okay.
And I want to put this out to our listeners as well. Ted Cruz, virtually the first words out of his mouth when he gave his victory speech last night was all glory to God.
That's what he said.
Now, the Constitution is explicit that there shall be no religious tests for public office.
Yep.
It seems to me... and I'm not a lawyer nor a legal scholar, so I'm not sure if I'm correct about this. It seems to me that those sorts of public professions of one specific faith are at worst unconstitutional and at best in bad taste in a secular republic like our own.
Well, I would say the second, the latter rather than the former. I don't think you can limit free speech in a candidate.
No, I don't think you can either. But I would hope... And this is probably a vain and forlorn hope, and it probably hasn't been the case for about 150 years in this country. But I would hope, for example, that an out atheist could stand a reasonable chance of winning the presidency in the United States. But I don't think that's the case. I don't think an atheist could be elected because, despite the fact that it's unconstitutional, we have what amounts to a religious test for public office in this country, and that nobody can win unless they at some point profess preferably their Christianity in the minds of most voters, but at least their religiosity.
I would agree with you in general, but here's an odd thing. Bernie Sanders, who is by birth and tradition Jewish, has said, and it's been sort of buried, but it's said very carefully that his faith, such as it is not based on any one single religion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's unprecedented.
No, you're right. It is.
So who knows? And the whole success of the Sanders campaign really does defy the enormous power of the dark moneyed classes of the Kochs and so on.
Yeah, it's true.
So, maybe, I think it's very unlikely, but maybe Bernie will end up the Democratic candidate. And if he does, it's very possible that he might end up president of the United States. So this is kind of an odd moment.
It's possible, yes. But Ted Cruz... Of all the clowns in the GOP clown car, he's the scary one. He's the nightmare clown in my book.
I thought Rubio's pretty scary, though.
Yeah. Cruz is much smarter than anybody else in the Republican field, and that's why he scares me in particular. See, there's the Republican Party has adorned itself in the trappings of nationalism and the trappings of religion for years. It's what they do. They appeal to the conservative evangelical Christian base. But Cruz practices an overt brand of evangelical Christianity that I believe has no place in a secular society like our own. And if he wins the White House, I think we're going to see a whole bunch of theological executive actions.
Like what?
Like limiting or even removing a woman's right to control her own reproductive destiny.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, that's certainly part of the agenda he espouses. It's also the case, though, and I think this is really important, that surely somebody will file a lawsuit claiming reasonably, and I think correctly, that Cruz is not eligible to be president of the United States. So that's a really serious disadvantage that he faces. He may paper it over, but I don't think he can get away with it.
Well, that remains to be seen. But this religion thing is a big deal for me. Frankly, I'm not a religious person myself, but I think...
You look like a religious person.
What does a religious person look like?
Well, I may have a red and black jacket.
Oh, okay, I see. It is my belief, this is just me talking now, that somebody, you ought to pray in private. You ought to worship in private. And in public, especially if you're a politician, it's nobody's business what your own.
Well, wait a minute.
But your own, what your beliefs
you're
are.
You're saying to go to a mosque or a synagogue or a church, which is a public behavior? What are you saying?
Go worship with your fellow believers. That's fine. Whatever. That's the religious sphere. If you're a politician, that should remain off the table. That's your own business. That's something you do on your own time. You pray, you believe, what you like, it's your own business. It should not enter into the public arena of politics.
Well, should, I won't argue. But the fact of the matter is that forever in American politics, there's been a series of assumptions about one's authenticity as a candidate based on one's religious orientation.
Right, and that set of
Remember,
assumptions...
Remember, for years, no Catholic could be a candidate. Kennedy
right.
changed that.
That's unconstitutional.
Well, it's unconstitutional, but it's true.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, what the hell?
Nothing I can do about it, or you or anybody else, really.
Right. We have not seen a avowed Buddhist get anywhere.
No, but Steve writes to the Facebook page to say, hey, there's a Muslim in the White House, right?
Oh, right.
Of course.
Of course.
All right, let's go back to the phones. BJ, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. First time calling in, long time listener. First of all, on the topic of religion, I'd like to remind the listeners that most of our founding fathers were deists. Get a chance, Google Thomas Jefferson Bible.
Right,
and he
yeah.
removed a lot of things that he didn't agree with. So if I was to define myself politically, I am a Bernie Sanders supporter, but my ideal version of Congress or government would be a bunch of guys like Dennis Kucinich and Justin Amash. So...
No ladies?
Consistency is important for me as a voter. A logical consistency. And I worry about when people talk about bipartisanship, that all we get is more war, more crony capitalism, where it's not like truly a free market. And, you know, no one's really looking out for the middle class or the working families. They're looking out for, you know, billionaires and millionaires, like Bernie says. And I'd also, you know, Hillary Clinton, she talks about her experience, foreign policy. You know, Libya was a huge mistake, and Iraq obviously was a huge mistake. And she's been a war hawk and consistently. And I just, you know, now she's, you know, Johnny come lately, trying to say, you know, a more sensible foreign policy. I just don't buy it.
Well, I understand, and I appreciate your call. I do think it's important to understand a factor in this, which is that many, many, many people, and many of them are women, see this as an opportunity, much the same way that there was support for Obama because of his being an African-American in origin. Many people see the opportunity for a woman president as a groundbreaking event, putting essentially genetics, as it were, ahead of politics, that is, political beliefs. And I think Hillary Clinton really is a conservative. I think Hillary Clinton really is an opportunist, but I think that at the same time, she does represent a progressive opportunity, particularly for women. And it's a contradiction that is going to become very important as this contest progresses.
Hey, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
All right. 231-8187 is the number to call. You can comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM.
That's a true fact.
It is a true fact. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah.
And the presidential race in general. Let's go back to the phones. Juan, good morning.
Hey guys.
Hey.
Joe asked the question, would Bernie's nomination bring people back to the Democratic Party? You know, let me tell you what
that was me. I asked that question, but go ahead.
Okay. Right. Okay, Abe. So here's the deal. I think everybody in the country should do what Washington and a lot of the others said we should do and not be aligned with any party. And every election we should look at what people are saying about issues, not their sex, not their color, not anything else, just what they're saying about the issues, and not what they're saying while they're running for the office, but what their record has been. Is this something they've been saying for 40 years, or is this something they're saying because there's somebody next to them that's pushing them to say it? All right? And I think we'd all be a lot better off if everybody did that. And Joe, I don't know how you can call Hillary, other than being the first woman president, there would be nothing progressive about her election.
I think Joe just called her conservative.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. And then followed that up immediately by saying there was some... Joe, do you remember what you said?
I don't remember what I said. So, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Well, listen, you followed it up by saying it would be a progressive step for women or something like that. Not for women, but I couldn't understand what you were saying. You totally...
Well, okay, I think you're raising a valid point. Let me go back to where I was. It was a major step in American politics to have an African-American be a candidate of a major party and to be a president of the United States. Now, the fact of the matter, as we look at Obama's career as president, it's a very mixed bag. And one of the things that's obvious is that his 3 years in the Senate and his rapid rise did not prepare him to deal with a totally hostile Republican Congress. I'm not sure that anyone could have done any better, by the way. That is very significant. But the joke that I used to say 8 years ago is still true. Obama had the capacity to punt on the first down. Now, that I find to be a really serious fault. And the lack of experience is probably the major reason for that. Now, in the case of Hillary, it's not a question of experience. She has shown over the years a lot of experience in dealing with a variety of things. But what it has shown is that she's relatively conservative and an establishmentarian figure. On the other hand, because she's a woman in a society that is really quite sexist, it is a breakthrough politically, just whoever the heck she is politically, that she is, in fact, a woman. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying. All right. So, but you know what? That is progress.
Well, it's progress of a kind.
It's progress for women. That glass ceiling has been broken, and I'm all for that, all right? Mm-hmm. With the right woman who is in the right place on the issues. I'm having a real problem with Elizabeth Warren. All right, I think she's great. She tells it like it is, as far as the financial institutions are concerned. She's been that way for a long time when she was a professor in Massachusetts, and she should be endorsing Bernie, and she knows she should, and she's sitting on the fence, and. It's like, come on, you've got to walk the walk all the time, just not when it's convenient. And she's worried about retaliation from the party. But you know what? We need people with some guts.
Well, I don't know what her fears are, and I'm not sure what her strategy is. But the fact of the matter is that the way in which our system is structured, all of the forces push toward the middle. The irony of the situation we're in now is that over the last many years, let's say arbitrarily beginning with Ronald Reagan, the middle has moved so far to the right.
So she's
caught in that. Anyway, I take your point. I think it's an interesting one. There is a obvious contradiction between the genetic reality of candidates and their actual politics.
Yeah. And it's not just that, you know, this is a Clinton. I mean, you can look at Dianne Feinstein and find all sorts of the same problems. You can look at Blanche Lincoln. And when you go back and you talk about how Obama had this uphill battle, do you remember how many senators were Democrats when he was elected? See, it's not just about electing Bernie. If everybody gets out there and everybody's energized to vote, and Bernie is actually, he's going to get swept in just like Obama did, and the very real possibility of taking both the House and the Senate back, because people will see that you can make a difference. I mean, if Bernie is you look at the numbers that the polls do now. Okay, first of all, I'm looking at an NBC Marist poll from February 2015. This is for Iowa. Hillary Clinton, 68%. Bernie Sanders, 7%. Okay? She's got all the money. She's got the party infrastructure. She's got all the name recognition from being first lady And then, you know, and then once you're first lady, everybody follows you around for the rest of your life when you're a senator, too. Bernie is this guy from Vermont who most people hadn't heard of until he started to run for president.
Yeah, true.
So in 1 year, with no big Wall Street donors, just me and Joe and whoever else is, you know, I don't know that Joe donated, but whoever else has donated to Bernie, this guy, this is David and Goliath, and he's doing it.
Well, that's certainly true. The thing to remember, however, which is something very hard for a lot of people to accept, is that this country is fundamentally structured in terms of its political organization and its money around a set of conservative, and I'll call them capitalist, values. So that's a factor. And what Sanders is doing is essentially appealing to people's sense, both their sense of fairness and outrage at the situation in which over the last 10 years or whatever it is, I'm not sure about exact numbers, but over a period of time, the money has more and more and more collected at the top in 1% of the 1%, while the rest of us really are hurting.
Believe me, I understand. But you know what, Joe? Here's the thing. In the 30s, capitalism needed Franklin Roosevelt to save it from itself. And now it needs Bernie Sanders to save it from himself.
That's an interesting... I want to let you go because I want to give others an opportunity. But that's an interesting point, that last point. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call. Who's next, Steve? John, good morning.
Hello. I hate to rain on everybody's parade.
Oh, rain away. This is Oregon. We can take it.
1968. I was 14 years old, middle school, in what they call now modern problems, social studies. We did the whole thing on candidates. 1968, Oregon was one of the few states that had primaries. I saw almost everybody who was running for president in 1968, from Ronald Reagan to Bobby Kennedy. I have a really bad feeling about this election. You can wave the flag and say Bernie's going to save the world or whatever. But I have a feeling he's going to go the way of Senator Feingold. There will be an airplane accident.
Whoa, are you suggesting that Bernie Sanders is going to be assassinated?
Yeah, well, 68. There were three assassination attempts. Two were successful. One was unsuccessful. You had Bobby Kennedy going in. Idealistically, he wasn't even supposed to even throw his hat in. Okay, so... the establishment picked Hubert Horatio Humphrey. Okay, there were different topics back then. You had the Vietnam War going on. That's true. However, when I heard the Democratic debate go on, and one of the questions was saying, will you be just as popular 5 years from now than now? And Hillary says, well, of course, everybody likes me. Bernie says, nobody's going to really like me because I'm going to go after, you know, people who have money. Well, when you mess with people who have money, bad things happen. And I see a brokered convention, Joe Biden in the Democratic one, and yes, another Bush. There'll be a smoke cigar filled room, and they will decide in the respective conventions who's really going to run.
Well, that may be possible, but consider the fact that a lot of those cigars may be not tobacco. Listen, I do want to give someone else a chance, but I understand what you're saying, though it's very grim.
Well, I see 68 because the issues were very intense in 68.
Yeah.
And they're just as intense now, but in a different way. However, the establishment is no way going to let either Hillary or Cruz or Bernie Sanders in there. They want people who are going to cooperate with the cash flow.
Okay, thanks for the call, man. That is not cheering, but thank you.
All right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, economist Dean Baker speaks on the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Oh, I'm glad that's brought up because we have not done enough about that horror.
9 o'clock, right after this show.
Okay.
At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, investigative journalist Greg Palast discusses how the next presidential election could be stolen electronically. Also, a look at the impact the upcoming Super Bowl is having on homeless people in San Francisco. And an update on the struggle for democracy in Haiti. At 11 on Stage and Studio, Demir Roberts talks with playwright Mia Chung, whose play You, For Me, For You opens this week at Portland Playhouse. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews photographer Michael Primo about Water Warriors, which documents efforts by East Coast Canadians and Native Americans to block fossil fuel exploration and drilling on their lands. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah. Yeah. You should, all of you should listen to that if you have the time and energy. And you should also remember that the finest music broadcasting in the region takes place here on KBOO. All right. Back to Iowa.
Ken, good morning.
Good morning. I'm still asleep, so I hope you'll be...
Yeah, I'm choking to death. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, I agree pretty much with what John, the previous caller, said, but it was Wellstone that had the airplane accident, not
yes.
Feingold, thank God.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, good yeah. point.
And these are only tangentially related to Iowa, but it turns out that the FBI has proven, I think it's more or less established fact, that Hillary's email account was all done on an unsecured computer. And I think that's very interesting because she certainly knows she should not have done that. And I wonder if there's some secret or some secret motive to her having done that.
Well, I actually think that it was just incompetence and stupidity.
No, I disagree with you entirely.
So you think she deliberately had an open-line computer? And by the way, I don't think it was so unsecure.
She could get away with it. And as a matter of fact, she is getting away with it because the prosecution, I think, has been deferred beyond the presidential race. So if she becomes president, what do you think will happen to those FBI files? It'll be just like her billing records Rose Law Firm.
Let me ask you this, because I've been curious about this issue for a long, long time. Do you actually think that there's something in those emails that is so detrimental to her or to the nation's security that it really matters?
That's beyond the point. There was top secret files.
Well, wait a minute. There wasn't.
And it's a felony to disclose
But that's actually fact. Wait a minute. Listen, this is actually factually. No, this is important. Factually, the labeling of these files as secret took place after, long after,
she was doing that.
You're mistaken.
Some research, please. All right? You are mistaken. And the other thing I'd like to bring up is in some sense, I think you're both quite naive because this election will be determined by electronic vote counting machines, and they've been known, I think, pretty substantially been proven that they can be flipped. So, I mean, who, as Uncle Joe says, it's not who votes that counts, it's who counts the votes that count.
And, which Uncle Joe is that?
Listen, thank you so much for taking my call.
Okay,
I'm looking forward to the rest of the interesting discussion and great programming on KBOO.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, the question of whether or not the election can be manipulated by electronics is valid.
Yes.
And I think that's an open one. And I think Greg Palast will be talking about that later today.
Palast.
You like Palast better than Palast?
No, he was on this show and told you how to pronounce his name.
Well,
but you never listen to him and you never pronounce
it. I never pay any attention to anybody.
Yeah, I know you don't.
I don't. Okay. I don't care.
Now, I want to talk for a second about this Hillary Clinton email issue. I confess that I have not immersed myself in this topic, and here's why. Because it seems to me yet another of the interminable investigations into the Clintons by the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Going back to the 1990s, when tens of millions of taxpayer dollars were spent on the Whitewater investigations to determine that absolutely nothing went wrong. Then again to the 2000s, when millions of taxpayer dollars were spent investigating the Benghazi affair, only to determine that Hillary Clinton was not at fault for any of the things she was supposedly at fault for.
Right.
So this seems to me more of the same. Now, I could be wrong about this, but if there's the only thing that Republicans hate more than Obama are the Clintons. So this seems to me like just another witch hunt.
Well, I agree with you. And I also think that, I mean, all of the stuff around the Clintons, including the Bill Clinton cummy dress, really all of them are just absurdities.
Yeah, I tend to agree. That said, I don't know enough about the alleged facts of this case to say with certainty one way or another what's true and what's not.
What I do know, and this is important, is that the bulk of the concerns around the security of her emails are about emails that would now be classified as secret or top secret, and at the time were not necessarily so classified. Now, was it smart of her to use her own private email system? No. Was it a conspiracy? No. It was a moment of foolishness, and she's paying for it.
Yeah, certainly. It's probably was not a good idea as Secretary of State to go on using your personal email account. All my friends know this address. I'm not going to change it, even though I'm certain, you know. Really? But you know how to get a hold of me, right? Same email address I've had since college. No.
Okay, well, not a bad idea. Let's go some more calls. 231-8187. We're talking about what just happened in Iowa, and we're talking about the future of the electoral contest this year.
Michael, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so the thing with Hillary's emails?
Yeah.
The classified material on her server was so high that it can't be released as part of this release of her emails project because it was code word classified stuff like particular names of agents overseas and particular sources. And it's almost 100% certain that the Russians and the Chinese and God knows who else got in and saw that stuff because, you know, it was sitting out there in the open. And that's really serious stuff that was on her server there. And the idea that it was classified afterwards, that's just her latest spin on it. That stuff was classified right from the very beginning. And there's one of her emails, this is really interesting, that she wants somebody to email something to her, and the thing is classified, and she says, just no paper it. And no paper is a phrase they use there for, you know, strip the classification headers off of it, cut and paste the stuff that's the content into an email message and send it to me in the non-secure. And, you know, that's an email that she wrote that says that.
I didn't know that. Is that really true?
Well, you know, you read stuff and it's not like I read it from some, you know, conspiracy theory website. I read it in, like, maybe the Washington Post or something like that. So it was really there and I read it. I could tell you that much.
Do you think it's a serious matter?
When you compromise our secret sources, like, you know, that means, you know, we have a double agent working in someone else's government, for instance. I don't know the exact specifics, of course, but when there are 22 of her emails that are so sensitive that they can't be released as part of this investigation process, which is currently the case, you know, that happened, I think, last week. Mm-hmm. That's serious.
Ask you this, because I'm looking at this question in a kind of jaundiced eye point of view. Is that more or less serious than the fact that Cruz is not under the Constitution eligible to be president?
Well,
give me a ballpark on that one.
Right. Well, the fact that Cruz may not be eligible affects him. The fact that very sensitive intelligence sources were compromised by Hillary's incompetence with their email server, that affects the national security of the United States. So I'd say that's more serious than whatever personal matter Cruz has to deal with about where he was born.
Okay, well, that gives me a sense of where you're at, also a sense of where the whole issue is at. And I don't know enough about the emails to respond to your comments. I really don't.
Okay.
Yeah, nor do I.
Do you want to hear a horrible joke about Bernie?
Is it family friendly?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, you know how in 1992 Clinton did better than was expected in the New Hampshire primary and started calling himself the comeback kid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if Bernie does much better than expected in New Hampshire, will we be able to call him the comeback yid?
Oh, that is so bad. Goodbye.
You won't hear it on this program. Thank you for the call.
We shouldn't have. We shouldn't have allowed that. We shouldn't have encouraged that.
Nope. All right. Who's next? Cheryl, good morning.
Hey, good morning so much this morning. Okay, first, let's remember that President Obama was elected due to his promise to get us out of Iraq. That was huge. It's easy to forget that, but it was the main reason. Second, I would say, this is hard for a lot of people to swallow, but a president is supposed to represent all Americans, not just the left, not just the right. And I really think that President Obama tried his darndest to do that, and he's come up apparently failure in a lot of people's eyes. Okay. And I would say also, it is indisputable that anyone running for president is clean. Everyone has a past. And it will always be that those promises are made at the time of the running for the office in any primary, that they will make promises. We look at their past, put it together. When they get in, how often can they exact anything that they have proposed during the campaign? I would say, basically, for every election I have ever voted in, that it's basically coming down to the lesser of the evils.
Well, I think that that's certainly been my experience to a great extent. So I can't argue on the last thing you said. We have always had often had questionable candidates. We ignored the fact that Ronald Reagan talked gibberish and lied, and then later was really questionable mental state. We know that Harding was a partner to many crooks. We know that Cleveland had a child out of wedlock. We know many of these people were mortal, not just mortal, but possibly very weak mortals. So I don't see people as president of the United States who are especially endowed with great, great vision or great, great ideas. Some had them, some didn't. The process is significant in that it is still possible, and Bernie is proving this, I think, to challenge the established order. And remember, this is a contest in which dark money from many elections ago has continually shaped American politics to the right.
Yes, I would agree to that. And in addition, I have listened to Bernie Sanders for many years when he was on very often on the Tom Hartman show.
Mm-hmm.
But as to looking into his policies so far, the one that stands out for me that is difficult is his stance on guns. I cannot see, from my perspective, how it is that just having a background check does stress a lot of people, although I can understand that they feel it is government laying down one more rule which may impact the Second Amendment. However, the gun situation is a large reality. I cannot see that ever changing through Congress. Congress is so staunch about the gun factor. It does bother me. And I will say, Abe, I will take issue with this. I do think that Bernie's age has an impact because of what Joe just said a moment ago regarding President Reagan, and that was he was elderly when he went into office, and it's a fact that as we age in the 70s to the 80s, there is a decline. So I'm very
concerned. Hey, I represent that.
Well, as I do,
and
too.
How?
I do, too. And I, you know.
That was a joke, I thought.
Yeah,
anyway.
No, it isn't. It's a fact. So, whatever. I don't know. I'm right now on the fence between Hillary and Bernie. Hmm. And so we'll just see what the upshot of
well,
that
is. Well, I think it's fine to be undecided, and I think it's important to really pay attention. One of the concerns I always have is that politics in America has taken on less of a significant role than football.
Oh, well, agreed. In all sports, really, let's face it. So we will find out what happens in the next, I believe it's New Hampshire, right?
That's right.
It's New Hampshire
Hey,
next week.
Thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Bye.
It.
Bye-bye.
I don't know. Some people, as they age, as they get into their 70s and 80s, begin to show symptoms of dementia. Some even develop full-blown dementia. I don't think we can presume that someone should be disqualified from the presidency on that count. Right. I haven't seen any evidence to suggest that Bernie has incipient dementia or anything like that.
No. He seems very cogent, very aware, yeah. Very powerful, and very physically active. And his doctors say he's in great shape.
Yes, they do. Brian writes into the show to say, if you want to pitch for a female president as the only criterion for a progressive leader, don't forget what Hatchet Thatcher, as we student activists and protest marchers called her, did to the UK. I consider Hillary Clinton to be a blue dog Dem publican, like our own lovely Congress critter Kurt Schrader, who may as well be a Republican as he votes with them 65% of the time. Sanders is the only one in the crowd stumping for single-payer health care to drag this country into the 20th century, never mind the 21st. And that is a primary human right, and the lack of which is the main reason I haven't become a citizen of the United States.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for the email.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. In regard to integrity and Hillary Clinton, in 2003, when the Senate was voting, not only the Senate, the Congress was voting whether or not to support going to war in Iraq, and she was a senator from New York, she betrayed her constituency who were petitioning her by mail, email, telephone, various means, and it was running well over 100-1 against supporting going to war. She betrayed her constituency. She also replied to why she did this with the statement that she had to think of the people who hadn't called her, who hadn't mailed her. This is a betrayal of one of our fundamentals of our democracy.
You know, you raise a very good point. The fact that she supported what has turned out to be the worst foreign policy disaster in the history of the United States does not speak well of her decision-making capabilities. Anybody who supported that war has a lot to answer for.
She betrayed her constituency in doing so. That's the problem. Have a good day.
You as well. Thank you.
All right.
Who's next, Steve? David, good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
You know, we can go dance around the subject of Hillary Clinton versus the evil Republicans who are trying to get at her. But if we just talk it in humanist forms, the most egregious thing that the Clintons did was they threw a 20-year-old woman and her parents and family under the bus to cover up Bill Clinton's sexual predatory habits. I mean, can you imagine how her parents felt? 21-year-old girl. Of course she's immature. All 21-year-olds are. They threw her and her family under the bus and twisted them into these evil monsters that took advantage of her defenseless president of the United States. And that's the most egregious thing that Hillary Clinton and her clan did. They don't care about people. They don't care about women. They only care about their own power and perpetuating their... What? Their reign.
I'm a little confused here. I always thought that people had their own empowerment, and that legally, in fact, people, male or female, over the age of 18 in every state, are responsible and presumably sexually responsible. I don't see an exploitation here. I can argue that it's inappropriate. I can argue that it was stupid. I can argue all kinds of things, but I don't see the gravity of it as you're suggesting.
Well, let's just talk about human family relationships. You don't have someone in an office who's 49 years old or 44 preying on 21-year-old interns.
Oh, sure you do.
Bill Clinton is not running for president and hasn't been president for a long time.
But
I'm not sure where you're
going with this. Hillary was part and parcel of throwing Monica Lewinsky and her family under the bus to save their reputation. And you know, we all don't have to go to the law books or the semantics books to know that someone that age, who's the most powerful person in the world in a powerful position, in an office setting, preyed on young, immature
kids. Well, you're assuming a very ageist set of assumptions around the woman who was involved with Clinton. What I see there was a very stupid behavior by the president and a very opportunistic behavior by a young woman who was caught up in the idea of fame. We're kind of out of time.
Yeah, we're going to have to let you go.
And we're going to have to let it go on that note, which is a funny
note. That's unfortunate. But I'm sure it'll come up again. This is going to be a most interesting presidential campaign, I think.
I don't think Bill Clinton is running for president, so pretty irrelevant.
No, it is pretty irrelevant. Listen, thanks, everyone, as always, for your calls. This wouldn't be nearly as much fun without our callers.
That's always true.
And we'll be back at you next week. Thanks.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nazis in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KABU Community Radio Artist in Residence program assists artists working creatively with sound. Every year, one artist or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KABU mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The goals of the KABU Artist Support Program are to support and invest in individuals who are pushing themselves artistically using sound, whose work will impact the cultural landscape of Portland, and to bring those artists into the dynamic KABU community of local, national, and international artists and activists. Applications for the 2016 KABU Artist in Residence are due February 12th at 5 p.m. More information and application materials are at kabu.fm/AIR2016.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, economist Dean Baker speaks on the TPP, a corporate deal. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, investigative journalist